I'm stupid. You're smart. I was wrong. You were right. You're the best. I'm the worst. You're very good looking. I'm not attractive.
All right. As long as you're willing to admit that now. Are you ready to get down to business and do exactly what I tell you to do?
It is the Homemade Broadcast, episode 68. How are you? I'm your host, Will Koontz. Big day. Election day was yesterday. Very disappointed in Florida, but who's to be surprised by that? But it doesn't matter. No matter. It's over with now, and we don't have to worry about it for another 4 years. Rick Scott is free to rape and pillage without his lizard mask. That's my own personal opinion. This is not endorsed by RadioSaintPete.com. But, alas, doesn't matter. It's over with. It's time to just move on. And we are moving on. It is episode 68. And it is Ilee Coleman Day on the Homemade Broadcast. Ilee.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing okay. Just still reeling over last night. It was a rough night for me, but I'm gonna get over it. It's gonna be fine. I was kind of in the mindset of this doesn't matter. It doesn't matter which one of those guys wins. I was just kind of upset that Amendment 2 did not pass with a majority of the vote, and I was a little upset. I voted. I don't know why I'm telling everyone how I voted, but I voted against that green light Pinellas thing, which was the expansion of the buses and everything. Even though I really secretly wanted it to pass. So basically, nothing went my way yesterday. And with 57% of the vote, Amendment 2 failed. And very upset about it. But I'll get there. Ilee is an author. He wrote The Bogeyman, True Confessions of a Golf Addict. When did that come out?
Yeah, that actually came out a year ago. It's one of those weird things. You know, I got introduced to the game of golf really by accident, right? So, some friends of mine signed us up for a charity event, and it was for cancer patients. And so I wanted to go, kind of didn't really, you know, I didn't want to do the golf thing really, but I wanted to kind of give back in some way. So, you know, we really went to kind of do the charity event, but then also, you know, to kind of meet some people. He wanted to do some business stuff as well. And so he needed an extra three guys to go with him. And then anytime he does something like that, I'm always the first person he calls, right? So, hey, guy, I need you. So I'm the wingman. So, you know, I go to this thing and, you know, I was like, oh, man. And, like, I stick out like a sore thumb, man. I never swung a club before. You know, I was like, these people are going to look at me like, okay, what are you doing here, guy? You know?
Right.
And so we go do the event. And, you know, I played sports back in my earlier days. So, you know, I was kind of like, okay, you know, it's only one day. But we go out there, and what they did was they played what's called a scramble format, right? So they played in teams.
Mm-hmm.
So when we started, you know, I started out there with the screw face. I really didn't want to be there and just kind of got to get through it. But by the time the sixth hole come, you know, I'm kind of like, I find myself strategizing and enjoying the camaraderie, and, you know, that whole team competition thing comes into play. So, you know, and from there, a series of funny things, comical, hilarious things just kind of followed behind, you know, not just from that day, but, you know, on up months, a year later, you know. So I just jot some things down, showed my friends. They thought it was hilarious. They was like, oh, you should make a book. And I'm like, really? And so hence, you know, I put some more to it. and put it into a book format.
Were you a natural? Like as soon as you picked up the club, you weren't like Charles Barkley out there. You had a smooth swing and everything.
No, actually, I was Charles Barkley. I was the guy who taught Charles Barkley that bad swing. Actually, I thought I would be, but golf is probably the hardest sport I've ever tried and done. It's the most. You have to be focused, and you have to, That's why the pros, can never master it. They said it's a game that it will never be mastered. You know, you can only attempt to control it for those few hours that you're there. But
there's a lot of variables too. Like it depends on the weather that day, for instance. Like that's a big factor.
Yeah, but see, I already play bad, so
it didn't matter whether it was good or bad.
Yeah, so the weather didn't change my score one way or another.
When did you start to like? So after hole six, would you say that you were pretty hooked? Like, okay, I'm getting into this. And were you already planning the next tee time? Or
no, it was it was really, really a weird thing. So after I do the golf thing, I was kind of like, okay, that was kind of cool. It's over. It's a one and done thing. And then just. Funny little things started to happen. Like I'd come across golf things, things that I in my everyday life that I would have passed in the beginning, before. Just things started to happen. Like I'll tell you, one day, I went into, so I was playing in a basketball league because I used to play basketball. So I was playing a basketball league and I happened to go into Sports Authority. And, so I asked the girl, hey, listen, where I need to go get a pair of basketball sneakers? And I'm in a rush. So I'm like, I need to get a pair of basketball sneakers. Where are they? And she goes, oh, they're in the back. Go down this aisle, go past the PGA sign. And behind the PGA sign is where you'll see the men's basketball shoes. I didn't know what PGA was. So here I am, kind of looking down every aisle. And then I come up to this PGA sign and I see Tiger Woods. Well, I saw Tiger Woods on the billboard, and then underneath it I saw PGA, and I'm like, oh, that has something to do with golf. So I just detoured into the aisle, and I start picking up some stuff, putting on the outfit, swinging the club. Of course I was swinging it wrong, but I'm in there swinging the club. So I got the I put the shoes on and everything, so I got the Tiger Woods thing going on. I'm enjoying myself, and I tell you one of the funny things that's in the book. So I talk about that, and so I hear in the background, some guy says to me, all I heard was handicap, right? So I thought he was kind of teasing
about
me.
You?
Yeah, so I was like, handicap? Did this guy just really call me handicap? And I got this club in my hand, So I was like, I thought he was real rude. So, I started to dismantle my uniform and put the club down because I was like, man, I don't want to go to jail or anything like that. And so, come to find out later on, handicap's part of the game. So
right.
It was just funny, weird things like that, and catch them into book format and put it out there. And, the whole ESPN thing happened, which was really weird. So I'm sitting at home. I get this tweet. And it's from an ESPN, or this guy who said he's an ESPN producer. So, I'm like, yeah, whatever, I didn't think it was truth, So for like 4 or 5 days, I didn't respond. And I just happened to be sitting home one day. And I said, I'll give him my 800 number. If it's a false thing, then, no loss, no gain, whatever. So I put it out there and he calls me. And we start to talk, and he lets me know, what they're trying to do. They're doing this documentary. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll be part of it because I'm thinking, hey, what a good way to promote my book. And so, he has Shelley Smith and Greg Shapiro come down, and they spend the whole day with me. And, we kind of go out on a course and do all of these things, and they take a lot of footage and everything. And, I made the show. So it was pretty cool, it's just kind of see things happen and materialize. The only bad thing about it, there really isn't a bad thing. I just don't, I wrote the book about golf, but I write about so much more, and so I didn't want to get painted as this golf guy, it's just that the golf book was just something that happened and it got propelled into the national spotlight,
Yeah. And if you're just joining us, we're sitting with Ilee Coleman. He is the author of The Bogeyman, True Confessions of a Golf Addict. And you did send me some of your excerpts from the book you're working on now, which is completely different, has nothing to do with golf whatsoever. It was interesting to read because I kind of thought it was going to be, you know, part golf, you know, Bogeyman part two. So how long have you been, you know, writing?
I've actually been writing, now that I look back on it, I've kind of done it from a young age, like really like grade school. You know, my upbringing was kind of tough. And so I would create these characters, right, to kind of jump out of my situation, you know, to be able to calm my nerves and kind of just go to a place mentally that I would be able to, you know, kind of an exit door, per se.
Sure.
So, you know, I would write all of these things down, make up all these characters, make up my own type of friends, you know, and play in this world. And then, you know, once I was done, I was able to close the door by dropping the pen, ripping up the paper, throwing it away, you know. And so, I never looked at it as a skill. I never looked at it as a way that I could make money from it or anything like that. But it was something that I did, and it just came natural. I tell you a funny story. It was the first time I thought, and I really didn't think at that point. I was in school. And I was in college. And so, you know, I was a procrastinator. I waited, you know, I played basketball. So I was kind of like, hey, look, just tell me what I need to do to pass the class, right? So, you know, one day we have this, I can't remember the name of the book, but we read this book in class. And it was something about a family at a kitchen table. And then our assignment was take from where we stopped and create your own ending to the story. So, you know, I had, of course, you know, I was procrastinating. I let it sit. And, you know, I waited till the 12th hour, the 11th hour. And then I, you know, I just kind of picked it up. And it was just one of those times that zone happened. And I started writing this stuff. And I just kind of blacked out and started writing. And, you know, when I finally kind of came back, you know, I had wrote all this stuff. And I really didn't even go back and read it. I was just like, hey, okay, good. I wrote something down that I can turn in where I won't get a zero, you know? So I turn it in, and, you know, lo and behold, the following week, the papers are getting graded. It's being handed out. And mine was the very last one to be handed out. And she actually didn't give me mine. I started seeing other people that had C's and, lower grades. And I was like, oh, man, this is all I need right now. I'm not going to be able to play basketball. So, she goes, Eileen Coleman, come to the front of the room. And I'm like, oh, no, she's going to put me on the spot. You know, the one thing that I hate. And she goes, I want you to read what you wrote. And I was like, no
thank you.
I was like, no, I'm not. So, you know, it's the funniest thing. So I was so nervous. I was so nervous because I still didn't see my grade. You know, all I knew was that she was putting me on the spot and she was about to belittle me again. You know, which kind of took me back to how it used to happen when I was a kid.
Right.
So, you know, she goes, okay. So she has someone else in the class read what I wrote. And it was like an undressing for me. So it was very uncomfortable. But I wound up getting an A+. I was the only one that got an A+ in the class. Mm-hmm. And people were like, you plagiarized that. And I was like, no, I didn't. I didn't even remember what I wrote. So it was amazing.
Yeah, that's one of the things we were talking about college earlier, and that's part of the process. Like, I really attribute I'm not afraid to show anything that I do now, probably to a fault, because not all of it's good, of course, but not everything's going to be good. But when we had projects, you know, you had to show what you did, you know, art-wise, you had to show everybody. And at first I was like, I'm not doing that. No, sir.
Yeah.
But you just have to. That's part of the process. So, I mean, if nothing else, college kind of taught me just that doesn't matter. And everyone feels that way, too. It's like a human condition lesson that you learn, that everyone kind of feels this vulnerability and, you know, it's okay. It's okay.
See, and funny you say that, because that is true, because, you know, here I am, you know, all of these years that I've done this and I've thrown these stories. I've literally thrown away thousands of stories, you know, and I don't know, it's still hard for me to call it a talent. You know what I mean? Like, it's still hard for me because
Because it's just what you do.
It's what I do. It's what I've always done, right? Yeah. And it feels natural to me. And it's, you know, like we were talking earlier, I don't have a set time that I write. Like, there's no, if I go to a computer and say, oh, you know what, I'm going to write this today, nothing comes out. It's usually I'm going about everyday life, and then all of a sudden I get hit with these, you know, these things just come into my head, and it's kind of like you just kind of black out, start writing them down, and the next thing you know, you got, you know, the makings of a story.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, so, I mean, we were talking about it all, off mics, but it's the same thing with me, man. I'll sit there, and if I say I need to get... I've been looking at this piece of wood now for like 3 weeks. I got a thing next Friday that I'd like to have that whole big piece done. And I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but I'm not going to force myself, because if you force it, it's not going to be good.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a thing for a buddy of mine who wanted me to do his album cover. And I was like, okay. And I put it off for months and months just because I was busy doing other stuff, but I didn't really want to do it. But because it was work and not had nothing to do with him, it would have been anybody. Like, once something, I've done a few things for, I've been commissioned to do things.
Uh-huh.
And it is tough, man, because I want to make them happy. I want to make sure they're good with it. So instead of just trusting my instincts, I'm trying to, okay, what are they going to like? And they like what I do, so I should just do that,
right,
you know?
Right.
But it's that struggle of I want to make them happy because
yeah.
I am a people pleaser. I desperately want to be liked by people, and it's tough. So when I got done with the cover, I was like, this stinks. I don't like it. So I don't know if he's going to like it or not. But then when I finally got it done, he goes, oh, man, I didn't even know you were going to do that. Like, I haven't worked on that album for like 3 months now. I'm like,
wow.
Oh, geez, I wish you would have told me that
yeah.
sooner.
Wow, there's you know, it's weird how, you know, artistic people, you know, because of the things that they create, you know, it's like with me, anytime I write something, it's usually something that is coming from either something I've experienced myself or someone very close to me have experienced, right? So I have firsthand knowledge. So, you know, I try to, you know, the first thing I do, if I let somebody read my stuff, right, because I'm still like, you know, oh, my God, you know, I don't know how this is going to come out. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm kind of like, okay, this is like an undressing to a point, right? So like the new project that I'm working on, like you read some of it, it's going to be called A Breath of Fresh Air. And the premise of that book, I used to go to this program called the Fresh Air Fund. All right, it's based out of New York City, and it's basically where an urban kids would go, and they would spend like 2 weeks in the summer with you know, in the suburbs with a family, and they would see something different, do things that they wouldn't normally do. And you know, I just happened to be on a Facebook page one day, and I saw some comments that someone had wrote, and you know, I was kind of like, man, that wasn't my experience at all, you know? So I wrote some comments back, and then before you know it, I get a call, not a call, I get a Facebook message back from the director of marketing. It was like, well, wow, I hear that you're writing a book based upon, you know, some Fresh Air Fund experiences. And I was like, well, yeah, I said, you know, all of it is not Fresh Air Fund experiences. It's just, that's part of it. And he was like, well, wow. He was like, can I get a copy of it? Because we'd like to help you promote it. And I was like, whoa. You know, so, you know, I was like, wow, that came out of the blue. So he was asking me, he said, well, when are you going to be done? And I said, October. That was October of last year.
Uh-oh.
You know, and it was just because then I went into, you know, trying to write mode. And when I do that, nothing comes out, you know. So the cool thing about it is that it's the book is it got twists to it. But when you read it, it's going to take you through an emotional roller coaster. It's going to take you through where, you know, what I'd like about my writing, that people, when they read it, they kind of say, you know what? You painted a picture that I can visually see what's going on, you know? And then that's when you're like, okay.
Yeah, I think it's important to make sure that you only have your perception to really go after. And people who try to look at things from other people's perspectives and then try to create art out of it, it always comes out either hokey or just bad because it's not a genuine experience.
Feel.
And that's putting, when you're writing or you're painting or anything, It's yeah. all coming from in your, it's in your heart. That's what they call, I guess, the heart, you know, yeah. of what you have. So it's quite evident when people try to fake something, and it's just bad.
Yeah. You know, it's what's really, really funny. And we were talking about this a little bit off about, you know, when you say artistic people, you know, just the many different perceptions that people get. Of artistic people, right? Sometimes they say they are lazy, or they, you know, they whatever the case may be. And,
yeah.
and it took me a long time to kind of wrestle with that, to say, well, maybe you are artistic, you know, to a degree, you know, mm-hmm. because we were talking about degrees and school and the inner workings of corporate America and stuff like that. And sometimes people are just not built for that, right?
Yeah,
and it took me a long while, but I had to come to the realization that I'm not in that lane, or I don't function long term in that lane, you know. And so, hence, you know, I started putting more emphasis on my writing and different things. And it's weird because it's funny. My cousin, he actually has done some film work, and we had been out of touch for a while, and. We were doing something, fantasy basketball or whatever, and he was asking me to send him something. And I sent him a file, but it was actually something that I wrote, and it was by mistake.
Mm.
And so, you know, I sent it to him, and I was waiting for him to, you know, respond. I'm like, dude, you didn't respond to me. Like, I'm waiting on your stuff. He was like, dude, what was that stuff you sent me? And I was like, what? And so he goes, man, who wrote that? And I was like, And I was put on the spot, and I was like, because I didn't want to lie to him.
His name is John. His name is John, I think. I don't know him, really. Just yeah. He plugged in his flash drive.
Yeah, and so I was like, dude, what, you know, and then I realized what I had done, and then I was like, man, I said, well, the first thing I was like, do you like it? He was like, oh, man, this is really, really good. He was like, who wrote that? And I was like, you know, I did. And he was like, what? And so then he was like, you know, you can make some money doing that. And I was like, what? Like, that was the first time ever. And that was recently. Like, that was, like, maybe a year before I wrote that book.
Mm.
So, you know, all these years, who knows? You know, you never know what talents or you know, things come out.
Yeah. You know, what? So you self-published the first book yourself.
Yeah, I did that.
How do you even go about something like that?
You know what? I scoured the internet. And, you know, I looked up self-publishing, and, you know, writing is so many different levels to it, right? Because, you know, writing the book was easy, right? Marketing the book, and that's the hard part, is kind of getting your stuff out there. Because the funny thing, well, everybody who's read my stuff has liked it. When people read the golf book, they, you know, most people, when they see the cover or whatever, they think it's actually a golf book. It's not. It's actually a book about friendships. It's about, you know, guys being silly. It's about, you know, just funny, humorous things. It's the same thing as if you would go to YouTube and watch, you know, most funniest videos or something like that. It's just in a written format. But guaranteed, if you read it, I mean, the cool thing about it was I had someone read it, a woman who never played golf, didn't like golf, didn't know nothing about golf, but after she read it, she was tear crying. So, you know, it was kind of like, okay, it does transcend into other things, you know? So someone can pick it up, follow it, and, you know. Yeah.
And if you're just joining us, we are sitting down with I. Lee Coleman. He wrote the book, The Bogeyman, True Confessions of a Golf Addict. So you self-published a book yourself. It was easy enough, found a YouTube video, and found a way to self-publish the book. But what was you said the marketing was tough. So what, how do you go? I don't even know how you go about that either. I know from this, I'm just like, hey, you should listen to this and look at this. And I give them cards and then that's it. But it's got to be more in depth than that, I'm sure. I'm just a moron.
Yeah, you know, marketing the book is where my deficiencies are showing. You know, it's because I'm not really a real public person, and I'm not, you know, I mean, I'm good one-on-one or in small groups, you know, but I get real personable, and I clam up sometimes, so I'm not this big pushy guy to where I'm, you know, hey, read this, or, you know, do this, or, you know, and I get marketing, the whole piece of it is, it's, I don't know. It's crazy. It's just getting it out to the masses. But it's, you know, you would think I would because, again, my stuff that gets read, people like it. I get good responses on it, you know. So I can say that. But, you know, I put it out there on Amazon, right? And I put it out there and never told anybody about it. I just put it on Amazon as if people were like, oh, Ali wrote a book. Let me go look at, you know what I mean? Like they would right. just do it by osmosis. But no, you gotta, you know, put it out there. You gotta shout it to the world, you know? And, I mean, it's cool because with the use of the internet, the book could go well, it is worldwide, you know, people from the UK, I get hits from the UK. On the website, from, you know, different countries. So that's pretty cool. So it's out there. And, you know, with me being on the ESPN show, that helped a little bit as well, too.
Sure.
You know, so it's just getting it out there, you know. But I didn't want to paint myself as being this golf guy because I'm really not, you know. Like if you go to my website, you can read some of the short stories I got out there.
What is your website?
My website is IleeColeman, IleeColeman.com. And, you know, I have a blog out there where I list some short stories, which will give you kind of an idea on some other things that I wrote. There's two things that I'm developing. There's one that I wrote that a lot of people, they read it and it has a double meaning to it. And it's really about a love relationship. It's called Thoughts of Susan Westside. And everybody, I've had now roughly about 400 people read it, and nobody has been able to guess who the girl is.
Oh.
So that's really fun when I give it to
someone. It's one of those where you can like be like, turn the page 46 if you go down the left alley. I used to love those.
Yeah, it's actually a really short read. Like this, it's not really long reads, you know. You can read it in a matter of 10 minutes. And it's a story about a relationship, and this girl named Susan, but no one has really figured out who she is. So that's pretty cool to have people, you know, kind of say, "Hey, it's this," and I'm like, "No." And then when I tell them, they're like, "Oh my god!" And then you know, you see the light bulb go, like, "Oh man!" And they get it, and they're like, "Wow!" Like they just sit there dumbfounded, like, "Wow!" And that's pretty cool because I'm like, you know, now the meaning of the story is taken on, you know, they understand what the meaning of the story is, you know?
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Send that to me. I want to read that too.
Yeah, I will.
You're not from Florida originally.
No, originally, born and raised in New York City. I was born in Brooklyn, New York. All of my family basically lived in Brooklyn. I was the only one that migrated to Queens. So I spent most of my time in Brooklyn and Queens area. Bronx, well, pretty much all over the city, because once you're in the city, you go all over boroughs. Yeah, it's all the same. So.
I got when I visited New York, must have been 2007, I would say, and I went with my friend who was a lady, wasn't a girlfriend, just a lady pal, and she had been there a couple of times. I'd never. It was the first time me being out of Florida, going to one of the biggest cities in the world. So we got there. She said, "Okay, when we get there, we have to take this train, and then it'll take us to where we need to go." And I look like I stick out like a sore thumb. I got a Hollister sweatshirt on, pullover. So I walk it out, and we take the one train, and then the other one that we need is out of service that day. And we're in Queens. And we come out of the terminal, and I'm just like this. You know, I don't know what's going on. And we're right out in front of the courthouse in Queens.
Oh, okay, Kew Gardens.
Is that what it is? Yeah, and I was like, yeah. And everyone just is kind of looking at me. They just know, and I'm like, oh boy, here we go. And I have a suitcase in my hand, a big suitcase. But everyone there was super nice. They were like, "Hey, man, I could tell you're lost.
Yeah,
where are you trying to go?"
Yeah, you know, the one thing about New York City is that you run into everything, right? So you have people migrating from all over the nation, all over the world, to come there. So you know the richness and the cultures, you know. That's kind of, I kind of miss that, you know, but, you know, people ask me now because I've been down here for so long. Like I left in, let's see, I was, you know, I born and raised in there. So I've been down here now since 1995.
Okay. So how old were you when you moved here?
I was 26.
Okay.
26, yeah. When I moved here. And, you know, it was just one of those things where I was like, you know what? I need a change. I'm going to twist. I literally, funny story how I got here, I actually pulled the map out, right? And so if you think, you know, somebody in their 20s who, you know, I was a weird 20-year-old. So I get the map out and I was
everybody
like,
everybody
you know
is,
what?
Man.
I'm just going to, wherever I land, I'm going to close my eyes, and wherever I land, that's where I'm going to go. Because I got to get out of New York City. I need to see something different. And so I landed, actually, I landed in Tallahassee.
Oof, you're like, oh, let me throw again.
It was, yeah, practice. I did. Practice. I did, because I was like, you know what? And it, so think about it. So back in 1994, it was that big snowstorm in New York City. And so I was like, man, I heard it snows in Tallahassee, so I'm not going to go to Tallahassee. Let me throw again. So I was like, you know what? I'll go to Miami. That's a mini New York. I'll be able to function down there. But, you know, propaganda and the whole hurricane thing. I was like, man, I've never been through a hurricane, but it seems like the hurricanes come from this East Coast, you know. And I was like, it's going to come through here. It's going to blow me away. So I was like, no, I can't do Miami. So, you know, if you look at the map of Florida and you put your hand on Tallahassee, you put your hand on Miami, and if you just start to migrate them together, you wind up in Tampa.
Yep.
That's how I got here.
Wow. Yeah. So did you come here with just by yourself or alone? Didn't know ladies or anything like that?
No. You know, my girlfriend, who's now my wife, you know, we were going through a rough patch. But I always knew. I knew back when I was 19 when I met her that I was going to marry her, because I instantly fell in love. It's crazy because I was walking with a friend and I was trying to explain her to him, and I couldn't get the words out. And she just happened to be walking in my sight, walking past. I didn't say anything because she was too far away, but he and I was walking and I was like, oh, there she goes right there. I'm going to marry her. And he was like, what? And I was like, what? So I have no idea where that came from, and nobody believes me, but he knows because he was there. So I knew right away that I wanted to marry her. So, you know, when we hit our rough patch, it was back in 1994, but I was like, okay, look, I knew I had to do something, or I was going to be stuck in New York City in the rat race and the whole thing. And, you know, I was like, look, if I leave, would you come with me? And she was like, I don't know. But in my stubborn mind, it was like she didn't say no. So I was like, okay, just bolt, go down there, get things set up, and then she'll come. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
that ended up happening.
Yeah, it worked out. It worked out.
So, did you get a degree when you were in school, or did you?
Yeah. I wound up getting a business degree. You know, it was just kind of the luck of the draw. You know, I didn't have any aspirations to be this big business guy. It was just, I promised my parents and my grandparents that I would be the first one to go to college and finish. And so, you know, I went to school on an athletic scholarship, and when it got close, you know, I had a couple classes left, and I actually could have finished with a double major, marketing and business management. And I was so tired of school, man. I was like, look, just give me the business degree, man. I was one of those guys, man. I went down to the Birdsaw's office, and, you know, I went and I said, well, wait a minute. I said, you know, I looked at someone that was graduating, right? And so I said, hey, this person who's graduating, you know, whatever, cum laude, right? I said, what, are their degrees going to look different than the guy who gets a C? And they were like, no.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's it.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, we're sitting down with I. Lee Coleman. He wrote the book, The Bogeyman, True Confessions of a Golf Addict. You know, and you were saying about the degree thing, and that's totally true. I saw this Colbert Report thing, and it was about this woman who she had like 4 or 5 degrees from Duke, these really prestigious colleges, but they don't really, unless you're like a lawyer or something like that, they don't look at your GPA. I mean, it's purely just, did you get the piece of paper? Yes.
Yeah.
Then you must be semi-competent, which I have an English degree, and then I'll look at the typos that I make, and I'm like, what a dummy. Like, how did they let me pass with these? I catch them afterwards.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Holy moly, man. Some of the stuff I do is, when you write, are you one of those guys who's takes your time and knows, or do you make a lot of mistakes, go back and fix them?
You know what? It's so weird, because when I write, you know, I write when I get that feeling, right? So then I just go and I don't even see the screen, to be honest. I black out. It's like I go somewhere and I'm in the story now, you know? And all I'm doing is either recalling, because everything that I write is there's truth to it, right? It may be a slight twist to it or name change or something like that, but there's truth in the story. So I just go back to that time and I just relive it. And so I'm writing it on paper and I really don't even see the words. And then when I get to a point where it either becomes too much or the trance per se is broken, that's when I stop. And that's when I go back and look at it and I'm like, okay, maybe this word needs to be switched or something like that, or, you know, to try to bring more into the story, or, you know, but for the most part, I just kind of go at it and then I'll go back and fix typos or anything like that.
Do you have like a process? Like I need, like, for instance, I like to have, I don't really, sometimes I'll do music. Most of the times I like to hear people talk. So I feel like I'm not by myself.
Okay.
So usually I'll just play like a podcast or something like that. And I like to have like books. I like to have a bunch of stuff around me so I can like maybe get a distraction, but usually I'm in it. And if I feel the need to take a break, so I don't completely stop and walk away. So I have like the computer here or book here or something. So I'll still sit and stay. So what's your, do you need like a quiet room, a glass of champagne?
You know what? It's weird because it's all over the board. Like there's no rhyme or reason to, you know, when that feeling comes, you know? But for the most part, you know, it's a quiet room, you know, but it's, again, it's after the feeling has come over me already. Right. So I could either be thinking about something. I could have seen something that triggers an emotion. You know, my wife could have said something. It just really varies. I mean, it's literally been times where I've been, you know, outside, far away from home, no computer, no nothing. And then, you know, that feeling comes and that need to write, or, you know, here comes a story or something, and or, you know, something triggered an emotion. And then it's kind of like it'll stick with me the whole time, though. It's like until I get it out, it's like you got to get it out. So it's really, really therapeutic for me.
Right. I used to have this roommate. I mean, this place is very small. This right here is a second bedroom, okay. And it is the size of probably the bathroom there. It's super small. And he's kind of like this hippie dude, you know. He's a good guy, but he would come up, and I don't like to be bothered if I'm doing something. And I'd be sitting here, and I wouldn't even see him, and he would come up behind me and just kind of lean over my shoulder. And I wouldn't even know he was there, and then I'd feel it. I'd feel it behind me, and I'd slowly look up, and then he'd just be like, "It's really cool, man." Wow. And then he'd just be like, "Get away from me."
Yeah, no, you're talking about...
You know, he's just meaning well. He wants to be like, "That's great that you're doing that, yeah, and fantastic, but I'm so glad that I live alone now. You have no idea."
No, that would kill a vibe for me, right?
Oh, my
gosh.
That'd
kill it. That would kill it.
Looking over your shoulder is just the worst.
That would really kill it. I was looking at some of your stuff, man. That's cool.
Thank you.
That's really cool.
Thank you. It's very painstaking, and it is a act of love. It's almost like a love-hate relationship with it because I get annoyed. But once I start something, I have to finish it too now, you know, and that's not only in this but in life too, you know. So it's taught me a lot of things about life.
Yeah, it's crazy. Life is crazy.
It is. I don't know what the hell's going on most of the time, but I'm figuring it out slowly, I think. But then once I think I have it figured out, another wrench gets thrown in the gears. And
you know, my ideal situation would be, you know, somebody picks up my stuff and says, "Hey, you know, this stuff is pretty good, you know. Let's make a movie out of it."
Yeah.
Or, you know, let's do a TV show.
Man,
you know?
Same thing here, man. I fantasize, like, for instance, the art thing. Like, I got my hand in a lot of honeypots here. I don't want to limit myself to just one creative thing.
Right.
So I'm doing, you know, the art, and then my fantasy there is a gallery owner is like, "I really liked your stuff. Wow. Let's ship it to New York and see how it does."
Yeah.
So cool. Who knows? That would be great. That'd and be then cool. I'm doing this thing, and I'd love to continue doing the radio thing. I was telling you earlier, when I was a kid, I used to play DJ and introduce music and stuff, and that's what kind of made me pick this up and do it. And then I also do comedy too. Try to do stand up comedy. Wow. I host a open mic, which the next one is. I'm glad we're talking about this. November 11th. That's Veterans Day, and that's at Sly Bar, 2061 Central Avenue. So I hope everybody comes out. It's free to watch, free to perform.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. So I like to comedy. Do that. One of my dreams, I think it would be to have just comedians in all the time. And it would make my job super easy because I could just sit there and, you know, kind of go back and forth with them.
You know, it's funny because where I grew up, man, is like a whole host of comedians. Like, that's where a lot of my, you know, like, there's always some type of humor in my stories. And I get it from those guys. I mean, guys would just tell these stories, man. And I was like, where do you come up with that stuff, you know? And, you know, so it's kind of a learned thing, you know, because you're around it all the time and all day. But, you know, the cool thing about, you know, meeting people like you and stuff like that is I'm opening myself up to the idea of coming to terms with, you know, I may be quite, you know, artistic.
Yeah. Coming to grips with people.
Yeah. But, you know, I think, you know, what would be more beneficial for me is to, you know, stop going against the grain all the time. You know what I mean? And listening to folks or trying to. You know, trying to communicate your ideas with unartistic folks. You know what I mean? People who are just going to slam you or, you know, they've never read your stuff. They don't know. But they give you bad advice. You know what I mean? And it would behoove me to be around more artistic folk who are in my same lane, right? Mm-hmm. And can understand or you know,
even if they don't understand, they will at least appreciate.
Right. More. You know, that's the word I was looking for. But, you know, appreciate it more. So
I saw this tweet. It was a Jay-Z tweet. And he did this kind of ask me anything thing on Twitter. And I think the guy asked him basically, like, what's your piece of advice? And he was just like, don't listen to anybody. They're all scared.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's once you can come to grips with just you know, in your heart what to do.
Yeah,
I think I do. I hope so. I do. Well, you know, and then you go ahead and do that and just kind of shut everybody else down.
You know what? He's one of my favorite artists. Him and, you know, it's funny. You familiar with the rapper Nas?
Sure, of
course. Yeah, well, I grew up in the same. Actually, we lived kind of like in the same building, and him and my brother were really good friends.
Oh, really?
So, you know, to see him do what he did and, you know, I heard something from Jay-Z one time, you know, where he was, you know, he was just talking about just, you know, believing in yourself and kind of letting your creative ideas just enlighten the world, you know what I mean? And just kind of going for it, you know? And it's kind of like, and sometimes you can look back and say, dude, you made it already.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, but he didn't. He had this attitude and that's why he made it. Right. I mean, you're not guaranteed anything in this life, but I know one thing for me is I don't want to look back in 20 years, 30 years and be like, man, what if I would have, you know, I don't want to do that. If I don't make it in any sort of creative field, fine. I did my best. I tried.
Right.
And that's, you know, and guess what? We're out of time already. Wow. Told you it goes by fast. Wow. You come back sometime though. Yeah?
So will. So will.
You could find Eileen's book on Amazon, right?
Yeah. Amazon.com and also my website. Or you can just Google me.
Yeah, comes up. You got the Twitter. It's
My Twitter is at Ilee Coleman.
I-L-E-E Coleman.
I-L-E-E-C-O-L-E-M-A-N.
All right. Facebook?
Facebook. I'm out there. I don't know as it's Facebook. Ilee Coleman. You know.
I think it is. Yeah. Just Ilee Coleman.
And then my website, you know. So, you know, I put stuff out there and I love to get comments back from readers who read my stuff and you know, give their thoughts on, you know, if they liked it. I really want, you know, when people read that Thoughts of Susan Westside, I like to see, you know, the things that they come up with of who Susan is. So
yeah, right on. Yeah. Well, thanks again, man. You can follow me on Twitter at @home_made_man, facebook.com/thehomemadebroadcast, radiosaintpete.com. What else? What else? Oh, Open Mic Tuesday, this Veterans Day. 8 p.m. free to watch, free to perform, Sly Bar, 2061 Central Avenue here in St. Petersburg. So for Radio St. Pete, my name is Will Kuntz. Have a fantastic week, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.